check out Rush Collectibles' awesome horror figures, including the first and only Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 figures. For more information, go to rushfigures.com.
Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, you're doing pretty swagalicious, taking it back to the 2010s.
Okay. You act like that's so far in the past.
I mean, it's 10 years ago, 14 years ago.
Yeah, but it's always, you know, you always think about things and, oh, it's not that long ago. But when you put things in perspective, it's weird to me because it's like literally in my mind, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, yeah, you know what? 2000 is not that long ago, really. It didn't, you know, that's what it feels like in my mind. But then I think, okay, but if I take that back when I was a kid and say 85 and you go back 24 years, we're talking 1961. And I'm like, oh, shit. In 1985, I would have thought 1961 was ancient. So it's weird. It's all about your perspective. You know, when you sit on a my end of life, it doesn't seem like as big a gap. So we'll give you the 14
years. He said, well, I'm sitting on my end of life.
Well, you know. Hey, you know, I'm saying I'm still in my prime years, but, you know. But, you know, I'm dragging those prime years out for a long time.
That's right. Hey, every year's a prime year if you try hard enough.
You know, I'm still having fun, and that's all that matters.
That's right.
And but I'm not sure how we're going to do this review today, because we have to review this movie without saying the star's name three times. And I don't know how we do that, but we are reviewing today, of course, Beetlejuice. And I guess those are the last times we can say it, because we can't say it that third. At least I can't say it that third time. So we're going to have to be very creative with how we say this. But with that review coming up later in the show, but I do want to remind everyone to check out the interview that we did with Severance Mountain writer and director Ethan Henry. It is available on all the usual podcast platforms, plus a video version on YouTube. His movie, as we record this, will be out Friday. It's Friday the 13th, and it's hitting video on demand. So that will be the day after this drops. I'm excited. I'm ready to see it. There's a good chance I'm buying this day of release so that I can watch it. And we have to send a special thanks to Ethan, because he was such a cool dude, did the interview with us, and had such a good time that he sent Ike and I some merchandise, some swag, some shirts and different things. Pretty cool. Pumps me up, excites me even more. So you know what? I think Ethan's a friend of the show now, and I'm excited about our friends project coming out this Friday, Ike.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I'm super stoked. Love doing the interview with him. It was super fantastic to kind of hear from him, hear the creative process. And this is one of those ones where I really hope that you watch the video version of, because, you know, his background's super cool. He's got all the cool nerdy stuff in the back and whatnot. So if you listen to the interview, make sure you also watch the video, not only just to see our pretty faces, but also see his cool background in a tattoo shop nonetheless.
Yeah. And because I was pretty excited. You know, there were some skateboard decks hanging back here. He said off the, we couldn't quite see it, but there were some video games, some upright consoles, or whatever you call them, arcade machines, and lots of cool stuff like that. But yeah, he's a cool dude, and pretty excited. I can't wait to see this. He was very protective of releasing things, which I can appreciate, and I will enjoy when I see the movie. Wow. You know, we have the gist of the movie, which anybody else can get, Yeah, we don't know a lot of details, and I'm excited to watch it, because coming from him, I think it's going to be a fun watch.
For sure.
So, yeah. So before we get to that, though, what did you watch this past week, Ike?
Very good question. Of course, in anticipation for Beetlejuice, I did, of course, watch the OG Beetlejuice. Couldn't miss it. And then in anticipation for what I believe is our next episode, I watched the 2022 version of Speak No Evil, which is the foreign Dutch Swedish movie, whatever it is. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it's Dutch.
It's coming up in the show notes later, so we'll hit
Yes, it
that
is.
later.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Spoiler. But other than that, I didn't really watch anything. I did finally finish my book, Clown in a Cornfield 2. I have another book, which this is a small plug for everyone to go support your public libraries. Public libraries offer a lot of shit, not only for you, but for the community. Serious note, go support them if you don't. Getting a library card, which is usually free, is literally the best way to support your library. So if you don't have a library card, make sure you go get one. But I have another book on the way. It's My Heart is a Chainsaw by Stephen Graham Jones, and I'm super pumped for it because that's a badass name.
Yeah, sounds pretty cool. All
Yeah.
right, let's see. So I too watched Beetlejuice, the original. Of course, I've seen it before multitude of times, but it was still fun to watch. And then let's see, I kind of on a side note, I also watched Goonies on a
Ooh.
rewatch because they there has been word coming out that Steven Spielberg is directing. They're doing a sequel to Goonies with all the original cast, Spielberg directing. So for whatever reason, that got me all excited, and I watched Goonies, and of course, that's always a fun watch too. But then more back into the horror vein, I watched a movie, the movie The Deliverance on Netflix. It just came out on August 30th, which was, it had Glenn Close in it and some other people. It's not bad. It was all right. Not necessarily my type of horror, but it was still a pretty solid movie. And then on Screambox, I watched Creeping Death, which just came out on September 10th, which I very much enjoyed. That was my kind of deal. Really liked it. And then I did watch on Tubi a movie that came out in 2014, a movie that I've been intending to watch for quite a long while because I've heard a lot about it. I watched the movie Circus of the Dead. I've
Oh.
heard a lot about it, had never watched it, and I enjoyed it. It was pretty twisted and fun. And it got brought back to my memory because there's a lot of rumblings going on now about Circus of the Dead 2 getting ready to happen. And I believe, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that I saw the other day that David Howard Thornton's going to be in Circus of the Dead 2.
I think so. I think I actually saw that on the one of the Facebook pages I'm involved in.
Man, dude just loves to play clowns, I guess.
Yeah,
It would be super fucking cool if he could play Art in it, but I don't know if that'll happen. But so again, I would like to see the sequel anyway, based on the first movie. It was fun enough, but knowing that he's going to be in it too, just makes it that much more intriguing to me. So that's what I watched. So I watched a few things and enjoyed them all to the different degrees and whatever else. So pretty good watch week for me, and I'm pretty happy with my choices.
very good.
So let's move on.
Order up.
Here's one house special cheesy slasher. Enjoy.
And it is time for our cheesy slasher of the week. This is where I give you a suggestion for a cheesy slasher, a slasher movie that is kind of usually low budget, maybe a little hokey, goofy, whatever you might want to call it. Not what you would call a big budget, high-end, production type deal. But yet it still has a lot of charm and fun and things like that, or is just humorous and interesting to watch. That's all subject to interpretation, though. And but this one this week is one of my favorite cheesy slashers. I've watched it several times and just rewatched it again not too long ago. It is the movie Trick or Treat, not the Sam movie, Trick or Treat, which was released on October 24th, 1986. The movie grossed almost $7 million worldwide. Written by Rhett Topham, Michael Murphy, and Joel Sossen. Directed by Charles Martin Smith. The movie is starring Mark Price, Tony Fields, and Lisa Orgolini, with appearances by Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne. Now, Gene Simmons, obviously famous for Kiss, was offered, I guess, originally the lead role in the movie, but didn't really want to do it. He took on the side role of a DJ in the movie instead. Ozzy just has like a brief scene or two in the movie. Now there is a kind of this in movie rock star, and apparently they had discussed with several kind of metal people at the time to do that role, and none of them did. Like, I guess it was pretty close with whatever his name is. Shit, something Lawless. Whatever his name is, something Lawless from Wasp. I'm not real familiar with Wasp, but he.
Neither am I.
I for whatever reason, I can't think of his first name. Yeah, I don't know why why I can think and remember his last name, but not his first is beyond me. But anyway, he kind of turned it down, didn't think the script was really that great, and didn't feel like that much fun. And again, it is kind of it is a goofy movie. It is kind of a little all over the place movie, but it's fun, and it is definitely fits the bill of a cheesy slasher. I would advise anybody to go give it a watch. It's especially a fun watch around Halloween, I think. It just has that vibe, that retro kind of vibe. So there you have it, Trick or Treat, from 1986. Ozzy Osbourne's scenes in it are great. He's just classic because he plays pretty much like a 180 of himself in it. It's totally like the opposite. So,
Is the guy you were talking about, is it Blackie Lawless?
Blackie, that's it. Yes, Blackie Lawless. Yeah, I don't know why I could not remember that, but yeah, I mean Blackie Lawless is he's a pretty talented guy in the metal world. Wasp is a good band, and all that. I'm not like a huge proponent or a huge fan, but they were in 1986. All these metal bands were big at that time. So, but he didn't. Wasn't really feeling it, so he didn't take it on. And I don't think the guy that did it's not any known rock actor or anything. He's just an actor to play, but he does a good job in it. He's believable, but it's a fun movie, and I would highly advise that anybody give it a watch. It is Trick or Treat. I do believe though it might be kind of hard to find. It might be one of those that you better hope you maybe have a physical copy of. I don't believe it's on any streaming service. I don't believe it's available video on demand. So, there you go. We're recommending a movie to you that you may not be able to watch. So, there you go. Right. The horror community help each other out. And if somebody wants to see this, maybe someone can loan you a disc or something. I don't know, but there it is.
It is on YouTube and Amazon Prime for purchase, I believe.
There you go. Okay. Well, there are options then. There you go. All right. Well, at least I don't feel totally like shit. For leading people saying, oh, it's a pretty cool watch, pretty fun, and oh, sorry, you can't watch it though. But there you go, YouTube or Amazon Prime for purchase, and probably not too expensive, and it's worth a few bucks to go watch. So let's move on. Talk to us, internet. And now we're moving on to Talk to Us, Internet. This is the segment where we respond to listener feedback or some kind of topic that has caught our eye on the internet or on social media. And that's kind of the case on this. It's kind of a combination of the two because this is on all of our social media. We put out a thing of a call for people who saw Beetlejuice this weekend on what you thought of it. And yes, we are on the Slasher app. If you're not on that, it's supposed to be a social media app for just horror fans. But we do post on there. All of our social media stuff, and a dude who calls himself Big Boy Ray Ray 88. That is such an online name if I ever heard one. On the
It is.
Slasher though, commented on our post and about Beetlejuice, and said it was fun, but lacked everything the first one had. The performances were wonderful, camera work, props, sets, and costumes were perfect. It was a movie crammed with a bunch of ideals, but no substance or plot. It was a music video version of Beetlejuice, but not a movie. It felt like a cash grab with a sprinkle of nostalgia. Now, the only reason I'm using this and bringing this up is because in my mind, the moment I read that, it raised the question to me. As much as people love the concept and love when these announcements come out about sequels and prequels to these classic movies after a big gap, right? A big, we've has several of them, right? Exorcist and this one, and we had the first Omen, and we've got the prequel to Rosemary's Baby coming up, and all these things, right? They always get these nice response when they're announced, but we get a lot of this kind of feedback when they come out. So I always makes me think, will most people just be disappointed more often than not when they watch it because of their preconceived notions and what the original meant to them as far as a nostalgic feel? Because again, in this review, what this guy's saying, he literally says it's fun. The performances were wonderful. The camera, the work, the props, the sets, and the costumes were perfect. But yet he says he didn't like the movie. It didn't feel like a movie. He felt like it was a crash crap. So it was, I don't know. And I'm not undermining his opinion because he's entitled to it. And that's fine. But it feels like this weird dichotomy in what he's saying here of, yeah, it was all great and great, bad. You know, there's all this. So that's my thing is it just doomed with certain viewers, you think, that when it's something, a prequel or a sequel, long after a classic movie, a very well-regarded movie, that it's just doomed that there's going to be a chunk of the people who are just going to be disappointed because they go into it thinking about the original without giving the second one just kind of an open opportunity. What do you think about that, Ike?
So I have two thoughts. My first thought is, big boy Ray Ray 88, go fuck yourself. No, I'm totally just kidding. that was a joke. No, but for real though, I think that we'll talk about our actual review later. I don't think that what he said is totally unfair. I think that just as a general rule, anytime you have a sequel, prequel, or any sort of continuing media from an existing IP, it is almost doomed to have a small, if not large, I mean, almost a small at a minimum. Okay, that's not to say that crowd won't grow, but from the inception, there's always going to be a small group of people who do not like whatever it is that is about to come out. Right? There are purists in the horror community and purists in the just general movie community who do not like sequels. They do not like continuing media, even if it's planned for, even if it's left open for that interpretation. They don't like it. And that's just always going to be there. That's always going to be an existing status when it comes to these types of things. There's always going to be people who think that. And then when the movie comes out and people watch it, there's going to be more people who jump on that bandwagon because they watch the trailer, they hear about it, and they say, I want Beetlejuice Part 2, but I don't want it to be new. I want it to be the exact same movie. I want it to be, you know, either completely unoriginal. I want it to be the exact same movie, shot for shot, with a little bit of update to it. Or they think that they're relying too heavily on the nostalgia and what was there before. There's very, very rarely anyone in the middle that's saying, this had the perfect amount of nostalgia and the perfect amount of originality. You know, there's always, you can't make everyone happy. And that's especially the case with sequels, prequels, remakes, reboots, the whole nine. It's always going to be compared to its predecessor, if you will. And that's inevitable. And like I said, what he said isn't unfair. It's just part of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, especially prone to a lot of this, I think, when there's this big gap, like there is between these movies, right? There's obvious differences, right? There's things that are just going to happen. But I don't want to say odd, because it's not odd, because, you know, people are entitled, but it just seems like when these things are announced, there is always this initial little group that's always like, oh, this sucks. Leave it alone. Don't make a sequel. Right. And they're like, okay, well, whatever. But then you have a bunch of people that are like all excited, but then it feels like a lot of times when the movie comes out, the negative group grows. And you want to think people went into it with an open mind and were disappointed, but I don't know that's always the case. I feel like people just they automatically go into it with a preconceived notion, and I understand that's it's very hard to not do, especially if you love a movie a lot. But you know, and as far as being a cash, I mean, I don't know, when people use that, I mean, I don't know, the goal, every movie wants to make money, I would think. I don't understand. I mean, you know, let's be realistically, you obviously you're not going to revisit Beetlejuice 25 years later or whatever it is, if you're not thinking that it's going to make money. Michael Keaton is, even if he loved making Beetlejuice, he's at that age. He's not going to put on all that makeup and do all this stuff if he's not getting a nice payday. He's just not. And that's not saying he doesn't have a passion for this character or whatever it may be, but he's at that age and his point in his career that it's, you know, that, you know, it's not, that's not what it is. And so I don't know. I think it's this weird situation. I think it's very difficult for filmmakers that are in that position to do it. And, you know, they may love the original movie. In this case, it, you know, Tim Burton directed this one. It was his movie and he directed the second one. And it's, but it's a really difficult position to be put in. Because it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, you're just, I don't know that you can see. I've never heard of a project like this where it's been a gap, especially where 100% across the board, everybody said, yep, there you go. You did it. And there's always people, a chunk of people that put it down. And, but, you know, to be fair, I think that might be with just any movie nowadays, not just sequels. So, okay. Well, we had a little discussion on that, but we'll move on because I don't want to cross too much because we're going to talk much more about Beetlejuice further in the show. So let's move on.
Stump the co-host.
And this week on our weekly segment, we're playing Stump the Co-host. This is our horror trivia game where Ike and I have identical trivia decks and we pull two cards out of that deck. And that is four questions. Each card has two questions. And we alternate asking each other questions to see who wins for this episode. Now, in 2023, Ike was the year champion for Stump the Co-host. And so far in 2024, he is leading to defend his crown. He has four wins. I have two wins. And we have one draw. So that's where we stand. And Ike, are you ready to play Stump the Co-host?
I certainly am.
All right. Well, I'm pretty sure that I usually put you on the spot and make you go first. So it doesn't seem to work for me more often than not. So let's try flipping that. And you know what? I'll take the first question this episode. And let's see what happens this time.
All right. I guarantee you will not get this one, all right? What is the name of the camp in the first installment of Friday the 13th? Totally joking.
Well, would that be Camp Crystal Lake?
Sure would.
Golly jeepers. I was just guessing. Never seen that movie.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Starting off strong.
Yeah, well, here we go. Keeping in the same theme of things, how did young Jason Voorhees meet his demise at Camp Crystal Lake?
He certainly drowned.
Sure did. Boy, it's just, man, a bunch of softballs today. Let's see how that keeps going. All right, so I'm ready. I'm feeling good at that first question. Bring on the second question.
All right. What does the photographer find lurking in the sewers in the 1984 movie Chud?
Oh, well, they are, man, how did you describe this? I guess I'm going to break it down and just say it's an alien creature. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just going with that.
Okay. So I've never seen the movie, but no, it's providing the acronym of CHUD is what it is.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers.
Hmm. Yeah, I had no idea what the acronym was. I didn't remember that. I've not seen Chud enough times to know that much of it. All right, so here we go. Your second question. Which installment of Halloween did Jamie Lee Curtis and Janet Leigh star in together? It's either Lee or Leigh, L-E-I-G-H.
Yeah, that would be Halloween H2O.
Sure would. Man, the movie I put on the view list. All right, here I am down again. All right, so bring on the third question.
All right. What was written on the hotel door in The Shining?
Red rum?
Sure was.
Woohoo! All right, here we go. Dude, it's weird that these questions, there's like, they kind of link together. So Jack Nicholson stars as a werewolf in what 1994 movie?
I'm actually pretty sure you had this one. You had this one last week, I think.
Oh,
or I may not last week. At some point, I'm pretty sure that's one of them. Or maybe not. I have no idea. I have no idea what Jack Nicholson movie had a werewolf in it.
It is just called Wolf.
Oh, okay. I guess with enough
Uh-oh.
guessing, I probably could have gotten that one.
Maybe. All right, here we go. So we are tied two apiece with one question left apiece. Okay, here's the pressure. So bring on my final question.
All right. What 2011 film was the first horror movie directed by Kevin Smith?
Oh, would that be Tusk?
It would not. It is Red State.
No, Red. Oh, they're calling Red State a horror movie? I guess.
Yeah, it's more like a political thriller if I had to take a jab at it.
I guess. God damn. All right. Here we go. What 1981 sequel is the feature film directorial debut of James Cameron?
Sequel. James Cameron, oh boy. Oh, is it Aliens?
It is not. It is Piranha 2, The Spawning.
That's okay. It
That's very, very random.
is.
So, all right. So, well, I didn't lose again, but I didn't win either. So there we go. Another draw on the books. Boy, oh boy, I can't get over the hump. So there you have it. Another draw. But I guess again, I guess it's better than losing. So whew, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will have all of our news, birthdays, movie anniversaries, etc. So stick around. Make sure you subscribe to listen to Their Screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams, that is listen, the number two in Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. Spread the news. Spread the news.
And welcome back with the news. All right, so we've been talking about it a lot, but Creeping Death is now available on Screambox. Got to check out what that mysterious sack is all about.
Fun movie. I liked it.
Good stuff. I need to check it out. I think I'll like it too, based on your review. So hopefully, I'll check that out soon and get a good look at the mysterious sack.
The
That's what we're looking for.
mysterious side. There you go.
There you go. We're not going to talk about the mysterious sack. We talked about it a lot the last two episodes.
That's right. We're giving the sack a rest.
That's right. We're burying it. But all right, moving on to Cinemark, Regal, and AMC will have the official Terrifier 3 popcorn buckets. Pre-sale is expected to go up soon, and the movie is in theaters October 11th. We're almost a month to the day away from that film, so it's in the
Oof.
home stretch here. I have seen some of the popcorn buckets and they don't look horrible, but I don't like that they're flat on the back. I don't like that.
Yeah, I think most of them are like that, but and I still, it's art. I gotta have it.
True. Yeah. That's what Kayla said. She's like, I'm gonna have to pre-order for you no matter what. I was like, maybe we can like drill a little hole in the back and like hang it on the wall or something like that. That'd be cool.
Yeah, maybe. I'm gonna figure out something to do with it, but yeah, I gotta have it.
Gotta have it. It's a once in a lifetime event. So,
That's right.
and then last little bit of news for everyone here. Piglet is getting his own movie. The spinoff of Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey has a trailer out. Of course, no release date has been announced yet, but this is obviously super exciting. Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey and its sequel Numero Dos are both fantastic. So I have no doubt that Piglet and his movie will be fantastic as well.
Yeah, I watched the trailer. It's man, it looks, yeah, it's super super creepy. Gives a little bit of a, I think, of a backstory to Piglet and everything else, and looks super cool. I like, man, I just love that what they're playing with here in this, in the quote unquote Pooniverse, and all the branches they're giving it, and I just love it. I love that they're taking this thing and running with it, and super excited to see Piglet.
Absolutely. And good stuff. Keep an eye out for more information about that, of course. And then moving on to upcoming birthdays. September 14th, 1973, Andrew Lincoln, for his most known for his role in The Walking Dead as Rick Grimes. You know, Andrew Lincoln's been in a number of other films and TV shows. I know he's pretty popular for his role in Love Actually. And other than that, I really don't know anything else he's been in. So.
No, I don't know either. I don't know. I'm sure he's had some bit parts here and there. I don't know. Yeah, I just know him from Walking Dead, but just such a cool guy. It always blew my mind the first time I heard him actually speak in that British accent. It's like, whoa. But yeah, I love me some Rick Grimes, and especially since, you know, he's come back in that new series, and good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the Ones Who Live is a fantastic little series if you haven't seen it yet. 100% recommend if you have not. But moving on to September 16th, 1958, Jennifer Tilly, known for her roles in Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky, and many more of the Chucky franchise. Obviously, Jennifer Tilly is a very talented actress, very good in the role as Tiffany. So definitely, I feel like a role created for her. She's just so perfect for that role.
Yeah, she is. And it's remarkable. I love it. I love it when certain actors and actresses just 100% love and embrace the roles they're in, that they've done, right? Like, you know, Felisa Rose with the Sleepaway Camp thing and so on and so forth. And Jennifer Tilly's like that, right? It's like she has taken it on to be that in real life. And she loves it. She's all the time posting pictures, you know, with Chucky dolls and just different things and stuff, right? Just so good. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the movie she's in as far as the Child's Play franchise goes. I love her in it. Love, you know, the doll in it and all that. But I love it so much more, her work in the new series. It's just, it's really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And then potentially even more famous than Jennifer Tilly, potentially. Also born on September 16th, a mere 20 some odd years later, I was born. Ike, born in 1995, celebrating my last year of my 20s. I am 29 this year, folks. So yeah, I'm
got to go hard.
That's right. Got to go hard before my 30s. I'm working on it. I'm going as hard as I can here, without dying, of course. But yeah, 29 this year, 29 on Monday. After recording, after this movie comes out, or this episode, I should say, I will be turning 29 on Monday. So fun times. There you go.
Well, happy birthday, Ike. A little early, but happy birthday all the same. And man, sharing a birthday with Jennifer Tilly, man, you can do worse than that.
Absolutely. I did not know that I shared a birthday with her. I saw that on here and I was like, that's actually really cool. I also share a birthday with one of the Jonases. I don't know which one. I think it's Kevin. Maybe. No, not Kevin. It's Nick, I think. Nick Jonas, I think, is the one I share a birthday with.
You said Kevin. I'm like, that's a Jonas? I don't even know. It's like, I didn't know what the third Jonas's name was.
Yeah, no. So I share a birthday with Nick Jonas, David Copperfield, and Amy Poehler. Oh, and B.B. King.
Hey, first of all, love some B.B. King. A big blues fan. But Amy Poehler, that's a pretty cool birthday to share with, too. She's great.
Oh, and I'm sorry, I just see more Mickey Rourke. Flo Rida. Oh, come on. Flo Rida?
You mean Florida?
Florida.
No. I do like Mickey Rourke, though. Man, he's a hell of an actor.
That's a good one. Obviously, this is just by a quick Google search. I'm assuming that this is accurate. So if it's not, I apologize.
You never know. Somewhere right now, Mickey Rourke's like, fuck, that ain't my birthday.
Right. Yeah, he's definitely listening to this, for sure.
I bet. Yeah.
Good times. But Jennifer Tilly, we share a birthday. Very cool. And then one day after my birthday, September 17th, 1951, Elvira. Who is
Elvira?
Elvira. Tomato, tomato.
No,
I kid. But hell obviously wrong. Known for her role as a horror host. But also, did you know, Dave, that Elvira was a character and a video game. There is a game called Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, I think it is, and there's a zombies map that pulls her in as a playable character.
Well, I'll be damned. No, I did not know that.
Pretty cool, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And Elvira does have a movie. Well, she's been in a few movies, but she has her own movie when she was at her height of her popularity. It's a goofy, fun movie. It's okay, but she's pretty cool. Still does things, still makes appearances. Looks wonderful for her age and living her best life. And I think she has a biography out and doing lots of cool things in this world. So she's one of a kind, and the world needs more Elviras and people like that are out there. You know, the Billy, Joe Bobs and whatever else out there tooting the horn for horror and scary macabre things. And she's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, speaking of video game characters, I forgot to plug this earlier, but we had a little bit of other news that popped up today. So for fans of the Call of Duty series, specifically of Call of Duty Warzone and Modern Warfare 3, the remake, especially those who play like online and shit, there is it's like a season pass type thing. And every year they do, it's called The Haunting or some sort of Halloween event. I'm not super informed on this because I don't play these games myself. But I do know a little bit. But anyways, every year they come out with characters. They've done like WWE characters. They've done, comic book characters, the whole nine yards. But this year they're bringing in some Halloween favorites. First and foremost, we have Halloween's Michael Myers appearing. We have Trick or Treat's Sam. We have Terrifier's Art the Clown, as well as the Trauma Demon from Smile. Very cool. I think the official, there's like a launch trailer right now, but there's going to be an additional trailer on September the 18th. No, actually, the season will be released on September 18th. So for those who are interested in this and want to get these characters, I believe you either have to purchase them or compete for them. So you can start doing that on the 18th.
Yeah. And this will be, as far as Sam, Art, and the Trauma Demon, this will be their first video game appearances of any sort that I'm aware of.
100%. Michael Myers has been in a few. He's had his own video games, as well as he had a role in Dying Light, which is is it Dying Light? No, it's not Dying Light. Dead by Daylight is the game
he's in. Yeah.
Dying Light's another game. It's a zombie video game. I don't know where I got that from, but yeah, Dead by Daylight. And he's also had his own little games. I think he had like one on the NES or something like that. But yeah, absolutely. I think for the Smile Demon, Art and Sam, this will be their first major, if any, for sure. Art and the Smile Demon, I want to say Sam may have also been in Dead by Daylight, but I'm not sure about that. I might be getting him confused with Chucky, because Chucky's in Dead by Daylight and they're both small. But yeah, it was very cool. I think it'll be really awesome. I do like that Call of Duty does this. I just wish that I liked playing this version of the game, you know?
Yeah. I don't play those at all, but it's one of those things. It's like, oh, it's cool that those characters are in it, but it's like, okay, well.
Right.
Doesn't really do much. I mean, I'm not, doesn't apply to me. So, but it's still, it's cool. Cause I like seeing horror anywhere, right? Anywhere they can infuse some horror characters, particularly Art the Clown. I'm all for it. So.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. So check those out if you want to. I will probably check out some like YouTube gameplay videos at some point to kind of see what they look like. But, from the screenshot, I can look and see the Art the Clown actually looked pretty spooky looking. It looks pretty pretty true to form. I wonder if he'll have his mysterious sack of killing items. This mysterious killing. Yeah, it's the Terrifier Operation Bundle. He has a knife for sure. But other than that, I'm not super sure what he's got. And it looks like Sam's got the little pot, like the sucker bitten off. Yeah.
Of course he has to.
And of course, Michael's got the classic butcher knife. So yeah.
There you go. Yeah, all right.
Good stuff. But I'll probably check out some videos online, or for people who are interested, play those games, rack up those kills, and get your favorite characters. So moving on to upcoming movie anniversaries, starting us off super strong. One of the best movies ever made. One of Dave's favorites. September 12, 2003. The one, the only, the award-winning Cabin Fever.
I'm going to push back. What award did that ever win? I'm sure it's won something.
I'm sure there's some kind of like internet award that it won.
Raspberries don't count. Right. Or whatever they're called. But,
the Raspies or whatever. I know what you're talking about. The Razzies, I think it is.
I don't like Cabin Fever. And I put it in here because people do like it. And I know you like it. So I put it in there. But not a Cabin Fever fan. So
he is not a fan of the fever. He ain't got the fever for the cabin. But it's an alright movie. It's not award winning by any means. It's just a stupid little fun movie, in my opinion. But I definitely see why somebody wouldn't like it. There's very little substance to that movie, if any at all.
It's just weird because a lot of times those kind of movies are what I like, and I don't know why this one doesn't hit me. I don't know.
Pretty sure this is an Eli Roth movie too, which makes it even more so worse that it was not as good as it could have been.
Can't win them all.
That's right. And then September 13th, 1991, Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. If I remember correctly, this is the one where it's like his kid, right? That comes and does some stuff. Is that the right one?
I don't know. I haven't seen this one. I haven't seen this one near as many times as the others, because again, this is not one of my favorite of the Nightmare movies. I think that's it though. Isn't that the one where they go back to the town and?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. But this was not bad. But like a lot of the latter sequels to a lot of these franchises, they just fall off so hard. It's just it's rough. But on an upswing here, huge upswing, September 13, 2005, God was born. I'm just kidding. the first episode of Supernatural aired, which is damn near as close to holiness as it can get. This should be marked down as a federal holiday. We should have time off work to watch the first episode. It should be mandatory. If you install me in office, I will do this. So
there you go.
Happy Supernatural Day on September the 13th, which also happens to be Friday the 13th this year, which is even cooler.
That's right. And I celebrate Supernatural every day. I watch Supernatural every day.
Right.
So, but thank whatever higher being, if there is one, for September 13th, 2005, when this entered the world. So,
yeah. Absolutely. But good shit. Thank you so much, Eric Kripke, for, I would assume he was integral into the creation of this in the beginning, I would hope.
It was his baby. That was the higher power I was referring to.
fair enough. Eric Kripke, we need to get his face on t-shirts, a WWE, what would Eric do? I kid. But obviously, happy birthday to Supernatural, and thank you for all the wonderful people who made it possible. Moving on to September 13th, 2013, another fantastic film, Insidious Chapter 2. We actually talked about Insidious with our Red Door review and everything else, so make sure you go check that out. But Insidious Chapter 2 is a very, very superb film. It is hand in hand with the first movie. You kind of have to watch it as a 1-2 punch, similar to It Chapter 1, Chapter 2. Insidious, fantastic franchise. Insidious Chapter 2, fantastic as well.
Yep, totally agree.
All right. Nothing else to say.
Nope.
And then, unfortunately, I do share a birthday with September 16, 2019, Three from Hell, from our friend Rob Zombie. Three from Hell was supposed to be sort of the top off to the Devil's Rejects series. I think there's a name for that series. I don't know what it is, though.
Yeah, it's something like the Firefly trilogy or something.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Something like that, yeah.
And it's supposed to be sort of like the cap on the night. Like I said, I at some point I need to go back and give it a chance, because I do want to be able to say that I've seen the movies. I liked House of a Thousand Corpses. I couldn't really get on board with Devil's Rejects, and I've never seen Three from Hell, so who knows? Maybe if I actually gave it a chance, I might like it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've shared our thoughts of Rob Zombie as a movie maker, but I know lots of people do like him and like these movies, so it's here. It's, you know, try not to be biased, and you know, so we're reporting the anniversary, but like we always say, hey, just Rob, just keep making music, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure, and we mean that in a nice way.
Yeah.
And then moving on to September 16, 2022, we have Pearl. Pearl, very, very good film. I have grown a much stronger appreciation for this movie after subsequent rewatches. And I'm very proud to share a birthday with Pearl.
Yeah, you said that. It's always been my least favorite of that trilogy. But yeah, to be fair, I've only seen it once. But even if I do appreciate it more, I still think it's probably going to be my least favorite of the three, because I really like X and I really like Maxine. And, but you know, it's still an okay movie. You know, I'm not putting it down, but, still a pretty good movie and a good trilogy.
Absolutely. And then moving on to September 17th, 2010, Devil. Actually, I really like Devil. Devil is a low key banger, as the kids would say. This is the one where they're in the elevator and, some real spooky shit happens. This is one of those, you know, they did a lot with essentially nothing. And honestly, this movie gets overlooked a lot when it comes to just generally how movies are premiered and produced. But yeah, I love this movie. If you haven't seen it, it's surely streaming somewhere, but it's solid.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And that's why I threw it in here, because it's not one of those movies that jumps when people are, you know, talking or listening. And I think it's a very underappreciated movie, especially for that time. I like it. I like Devil, and I think it's a great movie. I think it's well done. And it's one of those movies that I think should be discussed a little more.
Yeah, absolutely. But good stuff. Check these movies out. As we always say, check these out if you haven't yet. But moving on to September 18th, 1987, Hellraiser. I'm actually pretty sure Doug Bradley had a birthday pretty recently. Mm-hmm. So pretty close to the release of this film, which arguably is his most famous one. So,
yeah, I don't know if it's arguably.
I would say, yeah, objectively.
But yeah, got to be a good time of the year for him to have all that going on. And yeah, I mean, you know, you can say what you want about the rest of the series, or the rest of the whatever you want to call it. I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of. The other movies, yeah. I can't think of the word I'm trying to say. But anyway, the first one. yeah, it's not the word I'm saying. I don't know, whatever. But the first one's great. It's a great movie. A very impactful movie. A very important movie in the history of horror.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm trying to think of the word. Not. I think I know what you're saying, trying to say, but
that's franchise. Franchise.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what I was trying to think of. Wow.
Sorry, my brain started lagging a little bit. I'm like, I know what word he's trying to say. Yeah, franchise. Good Lord. Anywho, good stuff. Good work. September 18th, 2009, Jennifer's Body. We've talked about this movie briefly. It's been a long time since I've seen it. Decent movie, solid version of events, you know, for a vampire demon, whatever the hell she is. Yeah, I mean, if you haven't watched Jennifer's Body, it's actually not too bad, especially for a 2000s, you know, spooky movie.
Yeah, I like Jennifer's Body. And again, I think it's another movie that's a lot of people talk about it. I really do think there's a decent appreciation, but I still think it's a little underappreciated for that time. And, I don't know. I just I like it, and I think it's a pretty fun movie. I think it was pretty clever, pretty original, and yeah, I like it. Especially like you said for 2009, I think it just was really strong horror film.
Oh yeah, 100%. But there you go. I think that covers all of our news, upcoming birthdays, anniversaries. So let's talk about some upcoming releases. So we finally have some news about Stephen King's Salem's Lot. If I remember correctly,
it's been forever.
Yeah, it's been in production hell for God knows how long. We thought it was going to get a theatrical release. I'm pretty sure at one point it was on our schedule because we thought it was going to be in theaters. And I want to say that it didn't. And we ended up reviewing that shitty Children of the Corn movie, So that's just kind of to put in perspective how long this has been going on. But it is officially coming to Max on October 3rd. And it is described as author Ben Mears returns to his childhood home of Salem's Lot. we had an autocorrect and I almost said it. Jerusalem was the autocorrect. So not Jerusalem's Lot. This is not some weird like Jesus movie, but Salem's Lot, in search of inspiration for his next book, only to discover his hometown is being preyed upon by a bloodthirsty vampire. This is good stuff. There has been previous incarnations of Salem's Lot, if I recall correctly. Yeah. So this is definitely a sort of a remake of a previous production. And like we said, production hell, but Max is finally letting us see it. So hopefully it's good.
Yeah. Salem's Lot. There was an 80s miniseries. It was really good. And it just feels odd because it feels like, you know, whatever. We've done this, the podcast for about 2 years now. I mean, almost spot on about 2 years, I think, or getting very close to 2 years. And it just seems like we've talked about Salem's Lot on and off the entire time that it's happening, not happening. It's getting a theater release, but oh, no, now it's not. And now nobody knows because it's just disappeared off of everything. Nobody knows what's happening. And then here, it's just so, I don't even know. I don't know. I don't know the whole story, what happened. I'm just glad now there's a date and it's getting out there. And, you know, it's an update on a Stephen King vampire story. And I'm sure it'll be fun. And I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. But good stuff. Keep an eye for that. And moving on to VHS Beyond is coming to Shudder on October the 4th. The movie is described as six blood-curdling tapes unleash horror in a sci-fi-inspired hellscape, pushing the boundaries of fear and suspense. Obviously, we are so excited for another VHS movie. I am frothing at the mouth for another supple amount of anthology goodness. I am an absolute whore for anthology movies, unashamedly, and I'm so excited for this.
Yeah, me too. VHS, the franchise, to use the word that we couldn't think of earlier, has been one of the things that has helped turn me around on found footage. I have enjoyed the VHS movies, and I have enjoyed each one a little better than the one before, I think. I think the series has gotten better, and I'm super excited for this. I think this is, man, what is this? Is this the third one since we've been doing the show that's come out?
I think so. I think there's been three that have been released in the last few years.
Yeah, because there was the 85 one, and then what was the other one? Like a 70? Was there a 70? Or what was it?
Let me look. Because these are, real quick plug here, these are all on our Halloween watch list. In fact, it starts at the end of September and bleeds into October. But yeah, so I think there's been two released since we've been doing this, VHS 99 and 85.
There you go. Okay. Oh, that's right. 99. Yeah. So, God, it's wild to think that no other franchise has had three movies come out in this time that we've been, this 2 years we've been doing this. So, pretty cool. I feel like we're growing up with the VHS franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And hopefully they'll continue to make those movies so we can continue to review them. We would love that.
Yeah. I think they will.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's so easy to, I mean, it's such an easy watch. It is so, and I would say it's relatively easy to make because you just have a lot of people coming together to collaborate, to make independent stories that then kind of get thrown into a film together. So very cool.
Yeah. And Shudder is very much on board backing it and supporting it. And it's kind of become a cornerstone for them. And I think it's just all around, it's a good situation.
Yeah, absolutely. But moving on to our last but not least, Speak No Evil is set to release in theaters on September 13th. This is a remake of the 2022 Danish film written and directed by James Watkins, and this film stars James McAvoy, Mackenzie Davis, and others. It is described as a dream holiday in a beautiful country house becomes a psychological nightmare. And we will be reviewing this next episode. Now, I have mentioned this before, and I specifically put this movie on the September watch list. It's on the 12th, so it's actually going to be on the day of recording. This is supposed to be the movie you're supposed to watch before the remake. But I watched the OG this last weekend, and I like it, of course, but I'm actually really excited for the remake because I'm hoping that they do things differently. That's the first time I think I've ever said that I've hoped that the remake does things differently than the original film. And mean it sincerely and mean it in a way that is positive. So I'm super stoked for the remake. I love James McAvoy. I'll literally watch any movie he's in. And he's like, he got buff for this movie too, which is really cool. So good on him.
Yeah. Yeah. I like James McAvoy. And no, I've not seen the original. Don't know. I think I'm just going to avoid it. I just don't think I'm going to watch it before this. I'm just going to go into this with, you know, completely, you know, completely virginize and,
yeah,
and see what it is. And then maybe I'll watch the other. I'm going to try it backwards and see what happens. Who knows? Could be fun. But I'm looking
that'll work.
Yeah. Well, we're going to give it a shot.
Absolutely. And for those of you out there who also want to do that, you could also just, you know, you could always skip the 12th, but make sure you come back to it. I highly recommend either watching it before or after. I think it would be enjoyable either way. It's always fun to see like where the film came from. That's always my thing. I love to see like, oh yeah, this is where we started and this is where we are now.
Yeah.
But absolutely. So make sure you check out our next episode where we will talk about that and review that. And before we move on to our official review, we want to go ahead and let you guys know, make sure you're subscribing to us on social media. That's the best way to keep up to date on all things spooky, scary, and listen to their screams-esque. We have all of our good stuff that we post. We post about all these releases, all of the good news. We will make sure to get to you as quickly as possible. So follow us on social media if you don't already. With that being said, when we come back, we will have our official review of Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Stick around.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia, the podcast that dives into wrestling history. Hey, wrestling fans, I'm Dave Dynasty. And if you enjoy podcasts that are knowledgeable and history-driven, then Wrestling Nostalgia is for you. With great guests and fun interviews, there are over 200 episodes in our archives. We chat with several first-time guests and often cover topics not discussed on other podcasts. Look up Wrestling Nostalgia on your favorite podcast platform and visit all of our links at linktree.com/wrasslpod. That is linktr.ee/rasslepod. And remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
All right, and we are back here on Listen to Their Screams, and it is review time. And we are reviewing Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, written by Alfred Goff, Miles Millar, and Seth Graham Smith, directed by Tim Burton, starring Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder, Jenna Ortega, Catherine O'Hara, and more. The movie was released September 6th in theaters, and this movie grossed $110 million on opening weekend, which was good for number one, and it is the second highest ever opening weekend for a movie in September behind It. I believe I saw that it was the fourth highest opening weekend of the year so far. So regardless of anything else, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice is already a success at the box office. And I don't think that's any surprise. I think people were going to turn out and see this movie. People were looking forward to this movie. And I know that I was. And, I'm going to precursor this by saying it is very difficult for me to give a straight review on a movie like this because I do love the first movie so much. I have such a tie to the first movie, such a nostalgic memory for the first movie. And as we talked earlier, sometimes that blinds people. It gives them preconceived notions. A lot of times it doesn't do that for me. A lot of times if I'm this much in love with the original, the second one gets a lot of passes on things. And I will say that I liked Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I thought it was fun. It was super enjoyable. I do have a few concerns with it.
the movie was a little bit busy for me. I think there were some things in the movie that I don't know if they had to be in the movie. It seemed very peculiar. William Dafoe, which I loved him in the movie and loved his character, but his whole thing, I don't know that it needed to be in there so much. I don't know that it added to the plot line, but I don't know. It just seemed like there was an awful lot going on at times. And it did seem a little, like I said, a little busy at times. I thought the scene in the church with the wedding, while it was fun and I liked it, thought it went a little too long. I thought they kind of lost the charm of it a little bit, but maybe it should have been a little shorter. It was kind of that musical, like the Deo scene, the first movie, I believe it was like this movie's version of that. And I will say I liked the movie. It did miss a little of the charm of the first, but I'm not saying that in a super negative way. I think it was going to, no matter what. The first one was kind of a lightning in the bottle. You know, it just hit and worked. And when you try to follow that up and you try to lead from that and, you know, to be fair, try to recreate some of that, it's not going to come across the exact same way. But it still had some of it. I still like they brought kind of the same filmmaking approaches to it to give it some of that same vibe, that same flavor. There was a lot of parallels with some of the shots, the opening of the movie, some of the effects, some of the practical effects, some of the things they did. There were lots of parallels where you very much knew this was a sequel to the first. It felt like part of the same franchise. And I did respect that. And I did appreciate that. I will say I love Winona Ryder, but for some reason, the way her character was written at certain times felt a little awkward. There were times when I just like was so, I'm not going to give anything away because this movie's still out there and a lot of people probably still have to see it. But there were some things that her character did where I was just like, oh my God, come on. I was like, just get over it. Do it now. And it's like, I think some things with her character, they prolonged. I don't know. It was a little too much and it came across as a little awkward. Jenna Ortega was great in the movie. She, again, very much had the Lydia vibe from the first movie going. Michael Keaton, bam, knocked it out of the park. It just totally felt like he'd been doing Beetlejuice this entire time. Michael Keaton's a national treasure. I love Michael Keaton. And again, that could be biased eyes. I don't care. I love him. He's one of my favorite actors. And I thought he was great in this movie. I thought that, you know, the comedic timing and everything else still felt like the first movie. I think if they had calmed a little bit of the content down a little bit, maybe got rid of a few things, because again, they had a lot going on, a lot of multi-running things happening that I don't think all needed to be there. I think they could have calmed that a little bit with a couple. And I think it would have settled the movie a bit. I think the movie ran just a touch long. But again, I think you could have trimmed a little out of that wedding scene. If you had taken a little bit of certain things away, it could have calmed it down a little bit. I'm not saying they had to take a lot of it out. But it still, to me, was a very fun movie to watch. I fully enjoyed it. It would be fully a movie I would go back in the theater to see again. It's a movie that I can't wait to own so that I can watch it when I want. It's a movie that I can't wait to sit down when I own it and watch it back to back with the original to see how they feel together, one right after another. But I will completely 100% own that some of that may be an absolute bias because I love the first movie so much. And that some of that may bleed over that I may overlook some things, and that's okay. I don't care. I mean, it's just the way it is for me. Do I think this movie was groundbreaking and broke anything? No. This movie was very much done in the mold of the first movie. It very much was following, you know, a lot of the same patterns and repeated some of the tropes to try to get that same vibe. Some of it you have to do with sequels like this, like we talked earlier, with so much you have a gap. So no, I don't think this was like anything, I will dare say, not even super original, because Beetlejuice, the first movie, was the super original one. This one just continued on from that. And that's okay. To me, this was enough just to be a fun, nostalgic movie. And you know what? That's good enough for me, because I wasn't going into it thinking they were going to reinvent the wheel
I just wanted to see Beetlejuice on the screen and remember what I felt when I watched the first one and hope to get some of that. And I certainly did and enjoyed myself. And I'm 100% completely cool with that. And I feel like it's money well spent to see this movie. So Ike, you don't have that same attachment to the first movie that I have. It's not a movie, you know, directly out of your childhood like I have. So what did you think of Beetlejuice?
Yeah, so let me preface this by saying that obviously I love the movie. I do agree with some of the sentiment that you provided. I do think that there were a lot of unnecessary things in the movie. I didn't think that it needed all of the quote unquote villains that it did.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have Beetlejuice as sort of the primary villain ultimately. But then you also have Beetlejuice's wife, which I already forget her name.
I don't remember either.
She was stitched together kind of like Frankenstein was.
Her character.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and again, it was almost like her whole purpose was to drive the reason Beetlejuice had to do a couple of things. Otherwise, it's like, what, you know, she didn't have a lot of purpose in the movie. It was weird. It was so, and I think that was part of it, right? They had so many things going on that some of them weren't fully fleshed out enough and just kind of left. Again, William Dafoe was great in it. His character was fun. The way he acted was great. But I don't know that he added anything plot-wise to the movie that if you'd just taken it out, I don't know. That it would have changed anything. I love Bob, right? The shrunken head guy. Love him a lot. I think he's a great winner. I almost think they maybe forced a little too much Bob into the movie. That kind of lost some of that luster and that charm of him being well placed. That he was a little over the top. That, you know, he's not really kind of that heavy a character, I think. So it's like they tried to put too much of certain things in it. And I didn't mean to just take over your thoughts, but you know that. I think maybe a few things got shorted. Would if they had just honed down, it would have been a little better. So
right, no, and that's kind of what I was gonna say. I mean, it's like you have all these villains. You have Beetlejuice. You have her name was Dolores.
Yeah, there you go.
And then you have the boy Jeremy, which I'm not gonna spoil anything, but he plays a vital role to some degree. And you sort of have like these primary, secondary, tertiary villains that kind of pop up here and there. And you're just like, oh man, like what? Why is it so complex? And it feels like there's too many irons in the fire. Is how I would describe this movie. There's just a lot going on, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. In this case, I think it was a bad thing. I think that the exposition of the film ran a little too long. I think that it took a little too long to get off the ground. You know, using a metaphor here. It just felt like they were on the runway for so long. And that's just kind of how the movie just dragged in the beginning a little bit, in my opinion. And eventually it did take off. And there were some really great scenes in this. There were some really great quips, some callbacks to the original. I do think that, you know, Lydia Dietz in modern times was sort of a difficult role to play to begin with. Because, you know, Winona Ryder is literally picking up a film from 25 years ago, and is basically trying to do what she needs to do in order to make the film successful. And there's like that huge gap. I mean, literally, the original Beetlejuice was what, 1988,
I think. Yeah,
88. Yep. So even more. It's 26 years old. You know what I mean? More, no more than that. 36 years old.
36. Yeah.
Holy shit. I don't know how to do math. So obviously this movie, you have all these characters who are picking up 30 years later to do their characters. And really, I feel like the only person who really nailed it was Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like Catherine O'Hara did okay as Delia Dietz. You know, you kind of knew what to expect from Delia's character. But I think Lydia's fell a little short. And I think Jenna Ortega did a pretty good job as Astrid, her character's role. Yeah. And like you said, I mean, you have all these new additions. You have Bob, you have Willem Dafoe's character, who was great, but I just didn't really see why they needed him. And all these other tertiary characters, Danny DeVito was in it for like 5 minutes. I mean,
Yeah, see, that was a pretty cool. That was a pretty cool little spot, and it worked. You're kind of in and out. So,
yeah, it's just, I don't know. I definitely agree with you when you think, when you were saying that, like, there's a lot going on. Other than that, like you said, the wedding scene, it dragged a little bit. It just felt like that they were trying to outdo the dining room table sequence from the first movie.
Yeah.
And it's just not comparable. You know what I mean? They would have been better trying to find something new, like a new quippy thing to do versus trying to copy what was done in the original film. And to kind of make a quick callback to our friend who commented on our slasher app, Big Boy Ray Ray. Mm-hmm. He was, I think he had valid comments when he talked about it was a lot of ideas with no substance or plot. And I don't want to fully lean into they had no plot, because there was a plot. Mm. It was just too convoluted for it to be copacetic. There was substance, but it was hidden behind that convolution. And I just think that the film could have done so much better. I don't know exactly how. Obviously, I'm just a fat guy on the internet. I don't have the skills necessary to make a movie. So I'm saying this from my perspective as a spectator, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that they could have done better given certain criterias. And I just feel like there are certain areas that fell short that they shouldn't have fallen short in, because the original was so good, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, that's kind of my long winded rant there. But yeah.
Yeah. I think there was a definite plot, that got lost in the sauce. And if they had trimmed a little of the fat off and done away with some of the things, then it just felt like they wanted to force some things in because they thought it would be, you know, it's fun to have a lot of different things. And I don't know that you needed that with this. I think literally seeing, you know, the concept of Beetlejuice again was good enough. I liked the kid, the bad guy kid. I thought his story, that plot line was, I thought was really good. And that, again, didn't get with the full length. It just kind of got, bam, dropped off because they had the other stuff going on. I personally think they could have tweaked a few things. I don't know if it's, I think Dolores could have not been in the movie. I think they could have tweaked it enough, altered a thing here or there, and it still would have worked fine. I love William Dafoe, loved him in the movie. I don't think it needed him, or not to this degree. He could have had maybe a Danny DeVito shorter spot, maybe. Would have been good, would have worked. You know, the church scene, if you're going to do it, again, could be short. I liked all the little musical things here and there that they did with Beetlejuice kind of lip syncing, you know, to certain songs, because they were shorter, they were funny, in and out. If they had stuck that a little more in the wedding scene, where it had been a little more in and out, bam, let's get to the heart of the matter, it would have been okay. I just felt like they dangled so much, put so much in, that everything just got abrupt. And it was like, oh, we got to wrap this quick. We got to wrap this up quick. Got to wrap this up quick. And if they just done away with a few of them, they could have fully explored a couple of them more and had a more cohesive, better movie that really would have told the same story and flowed better. And to me, the concepts were good. The ideals behind it, where they were going and where they had the characters, were good. You know, even the way they tried to approach Lydia, I thought was all right. The way they worked it and what she was doing in the current, to try to keep some of that emo edge. But obviously now she's trying to balance being a mother and this and that, and this, what's happened in the past. You know what? I'm okay with that concept. But if you had just, again, if you trim some of the crap away, the fat away, I think that could have grown a little better. I have to say that I chuckled and kind of enjoyed the way they handled the father and him not being in the film. Thought it was kind of humorous. It was a nice workaround that I think worked. You know, they didn't have the original couple, you know, Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin in it. They did mention them. It talked about what happened to them. So it was at least addressed, works enough, it's good enough. Again, if you tried to put them in, I don't, it would have been even more. And I don't know how that would have worked. I maybe thought some of the movie leaned a little too much on Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah.
Instead of being more support, I really thought there was a lot of focus on her. And while I love her, I don't know that that character can support that much. I think they could have, they should have dialed her back a little more. And, you know, I think they just needed to trim a few things, put a little bit of a polish on some of the others, follow through. And I think they could have had a stronger movie with, while still telling the same stories, still having the same nostalgic charm. Whatever, it is what it is. They tried to cram a lot into it. Maybe they got a little overzealous, a little overexcited. They wanted to do a lot. I know, you know, Tim Burton directed. I know he didn't really write. I know I've read that he, you know, did give some insight. They did approach him for ideals and things. I do know Tim Burton has an over-the-top style of thinking sometimes. So I don't know that when they went to him with ideals and he would ramble and throw things, that they just grabbed everything and wanted to put right. it in there because it came. I don't know. You know, they had quite a few writers on this. I don't know that maybe there were too many cooks in the kitchen. And again, and everybody's throwing out ideas. You're wanting to use a little bit of everybody's, and that's what happened. And, you know, maybe the cake was a little undercooked and whatever. I don't know. Again, I had fun with the movie. I enjoyed the movie because I love the franchise. I guess you call it a franchise now, but whatever. I love the original. I love Michael Keaton. I love this character of Beetlejuice. And it had enough of that charm in there to make it fun for me. I think it, if you want to compare it to the first one, it way underachieved for the first one. It didn't have that wonderful flow and that natural storytelling of the first one. But it could have. And I just think they missed their mark on some things. But you know, again, that's what happens sometimes when you revisit franchises after that much of a gap. You know, Tim Burton's done a lot of movies since then. Michael Keaton's done a lot of movies. Winona Ryder's done a lot of movies. It's hard to just fall back into that, what you did 30-something years ago, because you're a different person and a different actor and a different way of working because you've done so much since then. And, and like you said, I think Michael Keaton's the only one that 100% nailed it in this. And, just really seemed to have a lot of fun. It just brought that fun part of it. And, but again, it's almost weird. You have a Beetlejuice movie and I don't feel like they overused Beetlejuice. I feel like they had him just right. You know, he was in and out where he needed to be at certain parts and they leaned heavy on him when they needed to. I just thought they used him right. Like they did in the first one, you know, his name might be on the poster, but you can't have the whole movie center solely around him. And I think they did that well, just not with some of the other characters and storylines. But I would still advise people to go see it, especially if you love the first one, because like I said, it's still fun. Just don't over hype in your mind what you're seeing here. Just go to have fun and to be happy that you're seeing a new Beetlejuice movie on the screen, and it's okay. And you won't be disappointed. I can't say I was disappointed per se, but I am a little biased. So all right, we've rambled a lot on this movie, but it's a movie I feel passionate about. Excuse me. So let's rate this thing. What are you giving? Well, I'll start out of five. I got to give it a notch above middle of the ground because I did have a good time, but I can't give it a four. So I'm going to give this a 3.5 out of 5. That might be a little generous on my part again because of the nostalgic and the love I have of the original. I'm comfortable with that though. I'm not blind enough that I can give it a four and think it was just spot on what it should have been. But you know what? I don't care. You can call me biased because I love it. I don't care. It is what it is. That's so be it. I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5. So Ike, what are you rating this thing?
I think I do have to agree because in my opinion, Beetlejuice is easily a 4, 4.5. Oh, yeah. And I think Beetlejuice is less than that. So I would say 3.5 out of 5 is probably where I'm going to land on this too, because it was better than the average run of the mill movie. And I do think that is purely because I like the Beetlejuice character. So 3.5 out of 5 is where I can hang out with that.
I agree. I will say that if Michael Keaton had at all struggled, it would have dropped it.
It would have.
Yeah, so, because just seeing him shine as Beetlejuice again, while you're watching the movie, it does let you overlook some of the flaws a little bit. Just seeing him, and how they utilize that character and how he was in it. So, but again, still, it was a fun movie. I'm glad we got it. I've long said I'd love to see another Beetlejuice movie. They gave me another Beetlejuice movie, so who am I to sit here and complain too much, right? I got to see Beetlejuice on the screen again. So there you go. So if you've not seen it, go see Beetlejuice again. I will say, when we did put the call out there asking people if they seen it and what they thought, overall, it was a positive reception. Much of the same response. People didn't really give critical responses about certain things. They just said, hey, it was fun. I liked having it, liked seeing it, and enjoyed my time. So, hey, that's all you can ask for, right? That's what you want in a movie. You want to go have a good time, forget your crap for a while, and just have a good time at the theater. So everything else is just, it's sometimes being a little silly to be that overly critical. And I'm not harping on anybody, because I'm just as passionate and sometimes just as overly critical on things as the next, but I had a good time. So, hey, I can't ask for any more than that. So, and as we said, next episode, we are reviewing Speak No Evil, the remake with James McAvoy. That is coming. So that's coming out on September 13th, this coming weekend, as this is released. So go see that in your local theaters. If you are watching along at all on our watch list, you will know that is coming up for you to go see that opening night in the theater. So go do it. Stay on the list. I've seen a few people out there saying, hey, they're trying to watch the list. Some of them are having to catch up here and there. We get that. That's cool. Again, however you utilize our Spooktober watch list, we're all right with that. Just have fun with it and enjoy yourself. Don't feel a pressure. Just have a good time with it. Before we close this out, I guess I want to say thank you to the wives, the listeners, the followers, everybody for all your feedback and your support. Thank you for what you do. Thank you to, what was his name? Big Boy Ray Ray.
Yep.
For his comments that inspired us to talk. Ray, no, Ray Ray or whatever your name is. No harshness on what we said earlier. You're entitled to your opinion, and your opinion is just as important as ours. It triggered an interesting question in my mind. And that's what the conversation started with. But thank you for your comments that sparked that conversation. So before we get out of here, Ike, anything you want to throw in?
Not much. Honestly, what I'm just going to say is, and I actually meant to mention this earlier. Did you hear that James Earl Jones passed away?
I did. Yes, I absolutely did. And, man, that was heartbreaking for me, because he's done so many things, but obviously very important in my life, right? The voice of Darth Vader, and all very important as well was his role in, Field of Dreams, a movie that I very, very, very much love. And obviously, he's done lots of other things. Did a voice in Lion King, so many other things, right? He's done so many things. But people obviously think of it Darth Vader. But that one hurts, because he was just always seemed like such a cool guy and such a positive guy. Every picture you see, man, he's got that big smile and just seemed like such a good dude. And I don't know, it's one of those guys that, man, you don't even think about him passing away, right? I mean, I don't know why. It's almost like you have this assumption he's always going to be there. And, but hey, the good thing is, I don't want to say good thing. I don't want to undermine the situation, but in a way he will, right? Every time you watch the Star Wars movies and you hear him, right? He's done things that will live forever and will always be remembered. And, something to be said for that and that legacy, but, I know that doesn't probably ease the pain of his family and his close friends, but some of them always hit hard. But yeah, this one hurt to see that. So
it did. I will say, like you said, Darth Vader is probably like what I know him most from, or Mufasa and Lion King. It was weird the other day. Kayla and I, we watched Sleepaway Camp, which has his late father, Robert Earl Jones, in it.
Yep.
And I was telling Kayla, I was like, who that is? And she's like, he looks familiar. And I'm like, you probably know his son. You probably know James Earl Jones. And So we had a conversation about that just not too long ago. And then yesterday I'd heard that he had passed. So obviously, you know, while he doesn't really have much in terms of horror movie credit, Star Wars is still a multi-generational, multi-genre, you know, amazing film. And James Earl Jones deserves that recognition. So I just wanted to, you know, mention him.
You know what? Darth Vader, one of the best on-screen villains of all time. If you say otherwise, you're absolutely lying. True. I don't care. I don't care if you like Star Wars or don't like Star Wars. Darth Vader is one of the most iconic cinematic characters of all time and has crossed over to a different realm of pop culture stardom. And that is because of David Prowse in the suit and James Earl Jones doing the voice, and both of them are no longer with us. And I just always remember them, right? Always remember them, the work they did behind making that character what it is, because you wouldn't have it if it wasn't for them. And I couldn't, you couldn't imagine it any other way than with that voice. And obviously, you know, it's, you know, not undermining his acting abilities, but that's what, you know, James Earl Jones, man, that voice. And, you know, he was known for, he had a very distinctive voice. I mean, his copy of the script from Field of Dreams with that, you know, that monologue, that speech he gives in it, his script is in the Baseball Hall of Fame because it's so important in pop culture history and for baseball. You know, and he's such a guy, so great. And yeah, it hurts. So
it does. It does.
Sometimes, I mean, losing any of them is bad, but man, that one was, I don't know, a very, very important in my life and to shaping who I am and my interests. I mean, Darth Vader, Star Wars is, I mean, it helped shape me. You know, it was so
fundamental. It truly is.
Yep.
Thanks
for bringing us down here at the end, dude.
I had to mention it. I felt like it was worthwhile mentioning.
Yeah, you couldn't bring it up earlier so that we could have came back up from it a little bit. No, throw it in at the end.
Hey, I forgot. I completely forgot about it until we were talking about something, and it made me remember that. You know, I was like, oh man, I should have brought that up. So, and I would have been remiss. I would have been remiss to not mention it because he's a great actor, great person. So had to mention it.
All right, there you go. So we'll leave on that note. So everybody, go have a drink and raise your glass to the memory of James Earl Jones, and you know, drown your sorrows. So.
That's right.
But until next episode, when we'll be reviewing Speak No Evil, always remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.